In this episode, we're going to be talking about an overview of All-Star Weekend, talking about some maybe some rule changes the NBA could implement to change the game a little bit, and talking about post All-Star break award predictions. There's a lot more to get to from there, so let's just jump right into it.
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
We're back after about a week and a half. It's been pretty busy for Hunter and I with midterms before the spring break, but we are back to recap everything that's happened. And we'll start with All-Star Weekend, because that was sort of been, that's kind of been the defining event of February for, I would say, not the best reasons. This, in my opinion, was really one of the more underwhelming All-Star weekends in a long time and really showcased a lot in terms of how the NBA has to change the weekend to make it a bit more exciting. So I guess let's start maybe with the positives here, and let's start with an event Hunter and I both were kind of looking forward to and actually did really excite and deliver in terms of enjoyment. And that was the three-point contest between Steph and Sabrina, Sabrina Ionescu from the WNBA. And Sabrina had an excellent performance. I think she would have been in the final round in the actual 3-point contest that happened in All-Star Weekend. But I mean, Steph did end up winning. But it was a really, really fun event. So I mean, Hunter, what was your thoughts on this event specifically? And do you think that the NBA should look into, you know, continuing this kind of special competition to future All-Star weekends?
Yeah, I think it was a really cool one-off idea, and I think the NBA sort of implementing one-off events like this could be really promising for the future. Like, we could definitely see like a Caitlin Clark event next year, possibly NBA All-Star Weekend, which could be really cool. Maybe a three-point contest there. We could maybe see like a two-on-two, maybe like Sabrina and Caitlin Clark versus maybe like Stephen and Dame, or like a Stephen Clay, something of that nature. But regardless, this was a great three-point contest in the regular contest too, just because there were, I want to say, four players who tied for 26 points in the three-point contest, which was the same score that Sabrina got in her bout against Steph. So, you know, that kind of just, I'd say it wasn't a coincidence, but it kind of just happened. Like, that's the kind of thing where, like, guys got to be on. The three-point contest is here to stay. It's never going to go away. It's one of those events where some years it's just going to be great, and some years it's going to be okay. But this was one of those years where it was great, and I really loved watching it. And Steph obviously would have won the contest if he had participated in it with 29 points. He was on fire. I mean, Sabrina was on fire too. I don't think anyone expected it. Like, she came out and hit her like first 10 or like nine of her 10 first threes, and everyone was like, whoa, like, what is this? And that was a great thing for the WNBA and a great thing for Sabrina Ionescu herself. And also just, I think it was a good representation to still, you know, like, Steph edged her out a little bit, which I think if Sabrina had won, unfortunately, there would have been a lot of haters and a lot of people saying, oh, Steph Curry, just they had to do that. That was the script, blah, 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 blah. But I think now everyone can say, you know, she's very talented at what she does, and Steph is just the best three-point shooter in the world. And I'm glad that's the summary of it and that everyone enjoyed it.
Definitely. And I think this was a really, really good idea. I think that it put a lot of maybe casual NBA fans onto, you know, how talented a lot of these WNBA players are. I think that, you know, Sabrina Ionescu, she can flat out hoop. She can shoot the ball as well as anyone in the world can, you know, and she shot from the NBA line. Like, there was a lot of talk about, is she going to shoot from the shorter WNBA 3-point line? But no, she shot from the NBA line. And as the numbers show, like, she was right up there with all the other guys in the 3-point contest that weekend. And yeah, I think that this kind of just shows that women's basketball is in a really good place right now. I mean, we're gonna have Caitlin Clark, and I don't know how much you've been following Hunter, but like every night she's been lighting it up.
It's crazy.
I mean, breaking records for like most points ever in college basketball. I think she's about to pass Pete Maravich, which is insane to think about. So we might be looking at the greatest, you know, one of the greatest college basketball players ever, period. In entering the WNBA, because she just declared today. And obviously you have Sabrina Ionescu and like so many talented players. I think that the WNBA is in a really good spot, and I love seeing some collaboration between these two leagues, just to showcase, you know, the best basketball talent in the world. So yeah, I think this was a really really big success.
Yeah.
I guess from there we can transition to maybe some of the more underwhelming or disappointing parts of the weekend. Let's talk about the slam dunk contest, because in my opinion, the lineups have gotten worse and worse year after year. I mean, we had, I think, two guys this year that were not even in the NBA, in Jacob Toppin and Mac
Mac McClung.
McClung,
Yeah.
playing in the G League. We did have Jaylen Brown in the dunk contest, but that would didn't really live up to people's expectations.
Yeah,
If
like,
you want to talk about
did you see that one dunk he did where he dunked it with his left hand and he was like, "Look, I can do it with my left hand, everyone."
that.
Like, that was like the highlight. It was that he could dunk with his left hand. It was a very average dunk. And the thing for me was, I don't even think he deserved to get to the final round. I thought Jacob Toppin deserved to get to the final round. And
Agreed.
obviously, they can't do Mac McClung versus Jacob Toppin in the final round because no NBA fans are interested in watching a G League slam dunk contest. They had to put Jaylen Brown in there simply because they needed the name. They needed the all-star, which actually made the dunk contest worse than if they just let the good talent compete. Like, we've talked about this before, especially with the introduction of like professional dunking and dunk leagues and just like social media dunking. It's reduced the sensation of a lot of these NBA players' dunks because, like, go back, watch like 1996, like, or like the, Kobe's slam dunk contest where he won. He does just like a simple between the legs, like, dunk. And then that's a, like, a 50, right? Like, if
Yeah.
you did that dunk today, you'd get like a 38. Like, nobody wants to see that. And it's just the evolution of the game. It's time to put this to rest. Let the guys like Jordan Kilgannon, like, leave him to the professional dunking, or like Chris Staples. Like, those are the guys who do that. Let them be that. And let the NBA players do what they do.
I disagree. I think that you can make the slam dunk contest fun, and I think that, like we saw last year, that slam dunk contest was really exciting with
I
Mac
don't think it was
McClung.
that great though. I mean,
Last
like,
year?
Mac McClung's a great dunker, don't get me wrong, and it was exciting to watch him dunk. But then it's not a slam dunk contest, it's somebody slam dunking and everyone else is just there.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, the NBA has to do a better job of selecting the participants. I mean, just think of how many explosive dunkers we have in the league right now. We have guys like Ja Morant, Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, Zion Williamson.
Right, but
You
like,
know, they're never participating.
we have that Anthony Edwards quote. He's like, guys just aren't gonna take this serious. Like, I'd rather be on vacation right now than playing in this All-Star game. And that would go for the same thing as the slam dunk contest. Like, he doesn't want to have to put himself more at risk of getting injured or like doing any more activity than he already has to do by being there. He's probably jealous of, his teammate Kyle Anderson for not making an All-Star game because he can go have fun in Cabo for the week or whatever. He'd rather be doing that. And I think there might be need to be a little bit of a mentality shift. You saw Victor Wembanyama's quote about, I think it's sad that these guys aren't competing. We saw Lauri Markkanen competed pretty hard. Karl-Anthony Towns competed pretty hard, but it was just guys few and far between, and it didn't make the game or the weekend exciting. So there needs to be a
Yeah.
mentality shift, and I don't even think the NBA can incentivize these guys with money because it doesn't matter for them.
Yeah, so you're basically touching on the All-Star game now, which we could definitely transition to talking to. This was the first time in NBA All-Star game history that, we surpassed 200 points. And you watch this game, and it was just kind of really not exciting. It was just everyone just kind of running around, taking half-court threes, ridiculous shots, wide open layups, nothing exciting. There was no defense, no competition to it. None of the guys looked like they really wanted to be there. And overall, it just made for a really, really dull game. And you compare this to, the All-Star games in the early 2000s, where the players adopted the mentality where it was more like, this is a pickup game between the best players in the world, and we want to compete, and we take pride in that. And thus, like, the All-Star Game MVP was a really valuable award, right? Nowadays, who really cares? Damian Lillard won it. He played really well, but like, who cares? That was
Yeah,
not a
like,
like that was not a real game.
I legitimately think the difference between like having an all-star MVP like 20 years ago and having that like matter for your Hall of Fame resume versus today, that should have no impact on your like resume of getting into the Hall of Fame. Like, this Damian
Yeah.
Lillard 50-point game, like, it does not matter.
Because if you think about it, like, in theory, that the All-Star Game MVP should mean a lot. It's saying we collected all the best players in the world to play against each other, and of those players, you managed to stand out and be the most valuable player in that game.
Right.
But now, players don't care anymore. You
That
talked
just
about the
means.
Anthony Edwards clip, where quote where he's talking about guys treat it as vacation. That's the problem, is that that's not the outlier anymore. That's the widespread mentality.
Right. And I think that sort of changed with this idea of like preserving the body. Like, I think it's a symptom of the preserving your body NBA mentality that LeBron James and a few other stars started. And I'm not saying LeBron isn't one of those guys who doesn't compete. I mean, you can't expect year 21 LeBron James to go out there and compete like a 22-year-old Anthony Edwards should be. But when LeBron was playing in 2006 in these All-Star games, he was competing hard. And, these guys aren't 15, 16 years into their career. Like, I think we take for granted the idea of Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, even Damian Lillard, Giannis, guys who are over 10 years into their NBA career, I can understand why they wouldn't push as hard. But guys just getting into the All-Star game, there should be excitement for them. They should have butterflies. Like, I'm stepping onto the court that only the greatest to ever do it get to step onto. And
Dude,
that sense is lost.
this was Anthony Edwards' first All-Star game where he was voted in as a player. Like, he was obviously in there last year as a reserve. Take some pride in that, dude. Like, what are you doing out here saying shooting with your left hand, jogging around, not competing? I get that players treat it as a break, but I really wish there was a way that the NBA could find a way to change that. Because as a viewer, as a fan of the game, why would I even care about All-Star Weekend? I don't want to watch a bunch of guys, jog around and like chuck up mid-court shots. Like, that's not entertaining to me as a fan. If I wanted to go see that, I go to LA Fitness, I'm
I have a proposal for you. Or I'll tell this to the people listening here, because I think I already sort of gave you the pitch and you liked the idea. And I have this idea: replace the All-Star game entirely with this All-Star NBA tournament. And people have talked about like a one-on-one tournament, but I have a thorough way to present this tournament. I don't think it should be one-on-one. I think it should be 3-on-3. Take the pressure off some of these guys, because one-on-one, there might be too much pride incentive in it. Because if you lose in a one-on-one, that inherently, there's going to be a lot of attention to that. But in a 3-on-3, there's some more excuses you can make. I think we should have 30 NBA All-Stars. Add three more to each conference, because there's so much talent across the league. I feel like there's guys who get snubbed every year. Have it be a schoolyard pick, the NBA starters, so all 10 guys each get to be a captain for a team. They pick two guys each to join them, so it's teams of three. And you have them enter a bracket where, it's like just like, 3-on-3 games. And the guys that are the captains of each team, so like this year, past year would have been LeBron James and I believe Giannis, their teams would have an automatic bye into the second round of this tournament, not of the whole NBA, but of this tournament. And then you have, 3-on-3 games of all the All-Stars, and ultimately the winner would get like, the All-Star tournament trophy. And they would also get one of them would get the MVP. I feel like that could be an interesting way to revamp the game, to make some creative adjustments. And look, you can have that and the All-Star game if you really want to, but I think this is a way to re-incentivize players to take some pride in it and to maybe enjoy, I think people liked that the idea of a couple years ago when like there was that draft, because they didn't want to just see West versus East. So if you want to have West versus East, you can still do an in-conference draft, and that way it still has some value to it, for conference play. I think you can adjust some things here and there, but that would be the general idea of the tournament.
I'm a fan. I mean, when you described it to me at first, I think I misunderstood it over text, and I thought you said, that the captains get a bye, and I was like, in the NBA playoffs, like, are you kidding me? But
Based on the
when
fan vote, could you imagine like every team's fans is just spamming now? Get my team into the second round of the postseason.
but no, your idea makes a lot of sense. And I think that, having it be 3-on-3, the players would be more okay with it too, because I think the 1-on-1 tournament like turns a lot of players off because they don't want to lose to another guy in the league on national television. They don't want to have their ego on the line like that, which is, I mean, understandable, I
And
guess,
also,
but
there's some guys who wouldn't care at all in the 1v1 tournament. Like, can you imagine Nikola Jokic going into a one-on-one? Like, he just would look at the guy and like just stand there, like, oh no, you scored on me. Like, if it's a 3-on-3, at least he's gonna like pass the ball, get his teammates open, like facilitate, you know?
In an underrated part, and I think the 3-on-3 tournament allows for another aspect of the All-Star game that is kind of not really mentioned ever, and that's that this is kind of an event for stars to network with each other. You know, if you're
That
like
too.
a guy like LeBron James, you're talking to stars constantly, trying to get them to come to your team, trying to stay in touch. Or if you're a star, you know, who's there for the first time, you're Anthony Edwards, you know, you're going to be talking to guys like Trae Young, you're going to be talking to other stars and other conferences that you might not necessarily know that well. You know, just establish a rapport because you never know how things are going to line or how things are going to line up in a couple years. So having this 3-on-3 tournament there still allows for that. And so
Yeah,
I'm a
exactly.
really big fan of this. And I think the NBA, they've always been willing to experiment and try a bunch of crazy things to, you know, revamp the competition and make it exciting. So I think they should at least consider something like this.
Yeah, can you imagine a situation where, you know, LeBron's picking his teammates and like obviously I'm picking Anthony Davis as my first pick, you know, within conference, you know, as my teammate. But then the next guy they pick, they're like, you know, Kyrie, get over here, you know, my boy, like. And then it's a little, ooh. And then for the fans too, it's like, ooh, what is Kyrie, LeBron, and AD talking about? All that sort of stuff is going on. And it could be literally nothing. It could just be fun. But like at the same time, it adds like sort of mysticism to this, you know, NBA tournament and provides that like a few years ago before Kevin Durant and Kyrie joined together in Brooklyn, you know, you saw them talking in the tunnel and everyone's like, ooh, what does that mean? Well, this could add that another element to that. And yes, the NBA is a league for entertainment. They're here for, you know, our pleasure. And
Yeah.
that would add to that, in
And
my
I
opinion.
think, yeah. And I just want to say, like, the NBA has, as I mentioned, been really, like, quick to respond to feedback. I think that they are going to make changes to this All-Star game. I mean, we saw, like, when the East versus West thing was starting to get stale, what did they do? They implemented this captain's draft, right? And they had, you know, guys drafting on national television, and that was exciting. And then people responded saying, well, I think it would be cooler if they did this in person, you know, like a schoolyard draft, as you mentioned. And then they did that the next All-Star game. And then people were saying, actually, this All-Star captains thing isn't really working anymore. Let's go back to East versus West. And then they did that this All-Star game. And so I think that the NBA has been really, really quick to sort of identify issues with the All-Star game and make changes to make it exciting. And so hopefully they follow through next All-Star weekend and make that one a lot better. Because to be honest, I was really let down this weekend. But we can move on. Kind of talking about the NBA more generally, there has been a lot of conversations around the sort of balance of offense and defense in the NBA and whether it's becoming too one-sided for the offense. We've seen, you know, basically every single team in the NBA now, if you look at like their offensive rating, even though we're like worst teams in the league now, like would dominate every other team of the past like 40 years in the NBA. The game has become ridiculously offensively focused, and we're seeing score lines that before would have only been dreamed of, right? You see, like, if a team scores 150 points in a game, that's honestly not too out of the ordinary, right? But that would have been unthinkable in the early 2000s or late 90s. So the NBA, their competition committee has actually begun reviewing whether the game has become too advantageous for the offense and whether changes need to be implemented to achieve a better balance. So we're going to jump into a quick segment here called Hoops Tank. It's kind of like Shark Tank, but for ideas about how to fix the game of basketball in the NBA. And so I'm going to propose a couple ideas to you, Hunter. I want to get your opinion on whether you think they would make the NBA a better sport, more entertaining, or whether you're not a fan. So the first idea is shifting the three-point line to remove corner threes. So essentially what this would do is expand the three-point line wider by the corners to basically remove the ability to shoot a three from the corner and expand the three-point line back multiple steps so that it's just further away to shoot a three-point
Yeah.
shot. So, what are your thoughts on this idea?
To be honest, I'm not a big fan of this one. I think the corner three is a really important aspect to NBA offense and to NBA defense. And I think this isn't something that necessarily is super ad advantageous to the offense. Oftentimes, we see players complain that like the sides aren't wide enough. Like oftentimes, offensive players will step out because they happen to be too close to, the sides, on the court, and, it's the defensive advantage. I think, yes, a lot of times you can sag off in the corners and players back cut, or, it's just an easier three than the top of the key. But I don't think this solves like the sort of issues we see in the NBA. And I think this also takes away from a lot of players' games. And it's a lot of the reason why a lot of players in the NBA is the corner three. I think that the NBA players and a lot of fans would also be outraged by this one, just because so many guys make their living off of this too.
Yeah, a guy like PJ Tucker would be out of the league immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
But I honestly, to kind of play devil's advocate, I kind of like this idea. I think that, if you bring it, first of all, bringing the 3-point line back a little bit would help in decreasing the number of threes. I think that guys would realize, like, look, the benefit we get from shooting this three is not equal to like the efficiency we're able to shoot it from this deep, because only a handful of guys can consistently shoot it from, multiple steps beyond the 3-point line now. So
I'd be okay pushing it back a little bit at the top of the key, but I think you still keep the corner three.
the getting rid of the corner three also, in my opinion, it just unlocks the mid-range so much more. Like, guys wouldn't, because right now what do we see in offenses, right? We have guys just camped in the corner all the time. I think that it would allow for a very interesting new kind of offense where guys just can't sit around anymore, because you sitting in the corner doesn't do anything. That's actually turns into like the least efficient shot in basketball, right? The long corner two. And so I think that, teams would have to figure out, okay, what do we do with that guy that used to just sit in the corner? We're gonna have to involve him in our scheme somehow. Maybe we run more set plays. Maybe we have a different style here. So I think it would really change. It would make a huge impact in the game, right? The game would be completely different,
Right.
and how it's played. And so it's a bit of a radical idea, but I think that, if the NBA wanted to, I think they could at least like maybe try this out in the G League, or that's one thing they've tried before, is like if they have a rule change or a drastic idea, they sample it in the G League, see how it works, and if it's good, they'll bring it to the NBA. I would want to see that at least. Like, give it a chance. Let's see what happens.
Sure, you can try this out in the G League, but honestly, I don't think that's something that would ever make the NBA. I can see 3-point line being pushed back a little bit, the arc is a little bit further back, but that corner three is here to stay, in my personal opinion.
Okay.
Moving on
But
to this next idea. Oh,
yeah.
if yeah. I want to talk about something that a few guys have talked about over time, and it would take away a lot of questions about the 90s versus today's players, and that's bringing back hand checking. Do you think that bringing back hand checking would be advantageous to the defense?
I mean, it would definitely be advantageous for the defense, but whether I think it'd be a good idea to bring it back is a different question. I think that, hand checking would prevent smaller guys in the league like Steph Curry or, I don't know, Trae Young from really being able to thrive, because they would just get dominated by these bigger players. Like, I think there's a reason why the NBA removed hand checking, and I think it got to be a little bit too excessive. And I think there's ways you can help the defense without having the game be overly physical. And I think that players have outwardly expressed that they don't want to bring back hand checking, and I think the league has too. So I think this is one that can be left off the table.
I also don't want to bring it back, but I think I don't want to bring that back for different reasons. I actually think hand checking is advantageous to the offense in today's NBA, and let me explain
Really?
why. Offensive players are so good in today's NBA that when players even try hand checking, you say offensive players will immediately go into their shooting motion and draw a foul. Like I've seen this multiple times. I was watching a video on this where it was Mikal Bridges defending Kevin Durant. And Mikal Bridges is obviously one of the best defenders in the NBA. He put his hand up for a second on Kevin Durant's back. Kevin Durant, as noticed that he was about to do that, immediately made the rotation and brought his arms into his shooting motion and drew a foul. So you're going to see that on mass scale. You're going to see offensive players start to be able to draw fouls just from being able to trap that hand into their shooting motion.
Yeah, but
And I
I'm saying, like, well, I'm saying if the NBA brought back the hand checking, that would be allowed to like put your hand there, and then swing your arms into the shooting motion wouldn't be considered a foul because you're
No,
keeping your hand there.
that would still be considered a foul, though. I mean, if you take that away as a foul, if you say offensive players can't use that hand checking to initiate their offense into their, if you can't use that hand to initiate into your shot motion, we're having a different story. Then I'd be okay with that. But I think offensive players would find a way to use that to their advantage. Offense is so good in today's NBA. It's not that I think the rules necessarily allow offense to thrive, which they do, but I think just it's so hard to evolve defenses to match the level of offensive potential. If a guy can shoot it from 40 feet consistently, there's nothing you can do as a defense to stop that ball from going into the hole or into the basket. There's just nothing you can do.
Sure. I think just the hand checking thing. I mean, the specific implementation aside, I just think that I've liked seeing, the rise of a guy like Isaiah Thomas that it just wouldn't be possible in 1994 if he was playing in the era of hand checking because, you just need to have a certain level of physicality to survive in that like style of basketball that just a lot of the shorter guys that survive off shooting really have thrived from. And I think like we would have never seen a team like the Warriors, become a dynasty had hand checking been there. And so I'm okay with not having it. But from there, kind of you alluded to it. Another idea that people have suggested is that we remove offensive fouls when the offensive player initiates the contact. So obviously this is like, when Trae Young is dribbling the ball and he'll like jump backwards into a guy, or when a player will sort of like Giannis does this a lot. He'll be driving, and then like sort of bump into someone, initiate the contact, get the foul, go up for the and one. So I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this definitely has to be removed from the NBA. It's very hard as a referee. I understand why this is a hard one to do because, like, determining whether an offensive player initiated contact or the defensive player was standing in the wrong spot is not an easy call to make in the moment. And you don't want to have constant replay after replay after replay. But I think there is still a way to implement this where maybe the calls aren't always going to be right, but you need to be able to determine the offensive players are just taking way too much advantage of a defense not being set.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think that it's a very like hard balance that I think we've seen the NBA officials get wrong a lot of the time in terms of like, it's something clearly looks like an offensive foul, like a guy just runs someone over and they call it a defensive foul. And I think that, removing this entirely would allow defenses to sort of see. Here's where you got to be careful though. Like, I think that, I mean, this rule exists for a reason, right? And so as a defensive player, you can't just like kind of bump into someone. Or I'm trying to think of like how this would actually play out. Ah, man. I
I think
mean,
overall it would help the NBA.
I think so too. I'm actually, I after thinking about it, I actually agree with you. I think this is another one I would like to see. Kind of on the flip side, because we both agree on that one. So on the flip side, another one that a lot of people have been talking about has been removing defensive 3 seconds. So allowing, your big guy to stay in the paint basically indefinitely, or maybe like to
The entire
7 seconds.
24-second clock.
Yeah.
I think the entire 24 seconds is what we're talking about here. And personally, I'm a fan. I think removing that defensive 3 seconds would close the lane, not allow players to as easily run through the paint, and it still allows for exciting, offense where players are going to be able to get by. But I think you have to reward good shot blockers, a guy like Anthony Davis, a guy like, Rudy Gobert. If they can camp in the paint, that's going to open up their defensive game so much, and it's going to make offense a lot harder for, any team. So, if you don't want to see games where there's 150 points score, the easiest way to do that is remove defensive 3 seconds, because now guys cannot get to the hoop as easily. And if they do, then, they have to try and draw contact. And, there's still a risk as an NBA player camping in the paint for 24 seconds, because you know what that means? That means players can attack, attack, attack. And if you commit six fouls, that it's a lot easier to commit six fouls if you're standing in the paint the entire time waiting for players to come at you. So there's a risk for the defense too, but I think it's just going to remove a lot of the offense from the game that's excessive.
Do you think that this could actually backfire in the sense where it's like, oh man, we have Victor Wembanyama, we have Rudy Gobert, we have another great shot blocker in the paint. Let's just like modify our game plan to be more centered around jump shooting. You know, like let's take more
Right.
threes because, you know, the lane is closed pretty much. Do you think that could happen?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's, but I think that's a symptom of it, right? Because it, then it becomes a balance. It's not just like, oh, you have to be outside the paint. That allows teams to scheme defensively to say, you know what? They have a player we're willing to sag off of in the corner. Like, you know, Anthony Davis is willing to sag off of, you know, Yusuf Nurkic if he's standing in the corner for whatever reason on offense, and allow him to, you know, side cover Kevin Durant attacking the paint. Like, I think that's very valuable to a defense. And I think it can also backfire in the sense that games become way too low scoring. The games can become so boring if teams aren't scoring unless they're shooting well. And that's okay. I think I'd rather have good defense than and like skilled offense than to have way too high of offense and no defense.
The defensive 3 seconds ones, I'm gonna have to think about a little bit. But if I were to like just be commissioner right now, I'd remove offensive players or offensive fouls when the offensive player initiates contact, and I would extend the 3-point line back, but I wouldn't remove corner threes just yet. And I would see what effect that would have on the NBA.
Okay, that's fair. I think I'd test it out first. Extend defensive 3 seconds to maybe like 8 seconds, you know, a third of the clock. See how does that impact the offense and defense and, you know, in schemes. And if it's still an issue from there, maybe I say, hey, there's no more defensive 3 seconds. I feel like that's where I'd go to immediately. And I'd also remove the offensive players initiating contact. And I think those two rules would be my changes to the NBA today. But moving
Gotcha.
forward, I think we need to talk about some post All-Star break award predictions because this is the time of year where we got to start talking about who's the MVP, who's the Defensive Player of the Year, and who's really standing out in these races. And I think some of these are very close, and some of these there's definitely a consensus. So, you know, starting with probably the toughest race now that Joel Embiid is out, where do you go with your MVP?
For my MVP, I've kind of gone back and forth. I mean, sometimes I've talked about it being Joe. I mean, I think before he got hurt, it was Joel Embiid, in my opinion. And then it was Shea. But I think for now, I'm gonna have to go with Luka Doncic. I mean, the numbers he's putting up are legitimately historic. He's averaging 34 points, 9 rebounds, and almost 10 assists. And if you were to actually sum up those numbers, right, like just add the points, rebounds, assists. I think that's the most in NBA history. So he's having like an incredible year this year. I know the Mavericks are sitting at number 7 right now, but you know, if they finish top 4, he has all the numbers, he has all the impact. I mean, we've seen the high scoring, what was it, 73 point game, which has sort of been the feather in his cap this year. And it seems like every other night we see some mind-bending highlight from him. So I think Luka Doncic has been playing out of his mind. So I'd give it to him as of right now. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's a great argument for Luka Doncic. And I've also gone back and forth quite a bit on this. But I think, as boring as it is, I'm gonna have to say Jason Tatum. I think
Oh.
it's a safe pick. I don't love it. I'd rather see Luka win it, but I'm just going with who do I realistically have is like in the lead. And you know, 27-9-5 is a great stat line. He's really improved his defensive play, and he's become a much better playmaker. You know, he's improved in a lot of ways. And like the Celtics are obviously head and shoulders above every other team as far as record goes, and this was to be expected. Their team, I would go as far as to say this is a super team. But with Joel Embiid out of the picture now, I think this is probably now a three-man race between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think he's the other guy we haven't mentioned, Luka Doncic, and Jason Tatum. I think those are the three guys right there.
Well, okay, if you mentioned that, you know, Tatum is on a super team, in your own words, how can he be the most valuable player
No,
in the league if
I
he's on a
agree.
super team? He
I
has
don't
an
like it.
all-star. He has Jaylen Brown, who's an all-star this year, two borderline all-stars in Kristaps Porzingis and Derek
Drew
White,
Holiday.
because,
Andrew Holiday.
yeah,
So he has
and
three
Jrue
borderline all
Holiday.
stars.
And then, you know, an incredible reserve unit, too. One of the best coaches in the league. Like, how is this guy the best player or the most valuable player in the league?
Look, I fully agree with you, but I think that year by year, the sort of criteria to be an MVP changes. Like we've seen that time and time again with like Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant. And I'm not defending that Steve Nash MVP, by the way. But I
Two
still
of
do
them.
think that Jason,
Two of them. Two MVPs.
two of them. Yes, you're right. But I just generally think that once Embiid is out of this picture, because he was the by far and away the guy who was going to win it, I really do think that Jason Tatum has a legitimate argument, and I'm just providing another argument because I also do think I would be happy if Luka Doncic won it. I'm just providing another, potential option who I think has a legitimate chance at it.
Okay, that's a fair argument, and I've seen that kind of circulating around too. And I think if there was any year that Tatum was going to win, I guess it'd be this one, just because of how dominant the Celtics have been. And the NBA likes to reward winning a lot. And as you said, he has been playing well on both ends of the floor, putting up great numbers. So I would be, it would make sense, but I wouldn't be happy with it. I think that it's if it's not
That's fair.
Luka, then I still think like a guy like Shea should still be in that conversation. And also, like, we can't completely discredit. Actually, I think we can discredit Joel Embiid because I think he's gonna miss the games
Yeah,
cutoff. But I was gonna say,
he
like,
is.
if he comes back, within the next couple weeks, maybe there's a chance, but I don't
If
know.
he
It's
comes back
Luka's.
tomorrow and plays every game for the rest of the season, maybe he'll be in enough games.
Who knows? Who knows? But let's move
But
on to talk about the defensive player of the year. Who do you have, Hunter? Currently, as your defensive player of the year.
yeah, this might come off as crazy. I'm having Wemby, man. I gotta take Victor
Really?
Wembanyama. Yeah, I
Okay,
really
that in my
think.
opinion is ridiculous.
Look, I think it might be a little bit of a stretch, but I really like. I think Anthony Davis and Rudy Gobert are like the top two right now. I mean, like Rudy Gobert has really just been his dominant self on the best defensive team in the league. Anthony Davis, I think, has a little bit less of an argument. I think he's fallen off defensively this year, but like he's just been an amazing rebounder. He's been blocking a ton of shots, and he's very versatile. When I talk about who do I think is the most the best defensive player in the league, I think it's Anthony Davis because I think he covers the most on the floor at any given time, and teams have to scheme and change their entire offense because he's there. But I don't think the NBA values that. Like I'm saying, I think based on the counting stats, based on like when you watch a player play, I think Victor Wembanyama looks like the best defensive player, when I think in actuality, Anthony Davis is the best defensive player. Get what I'm saying?
I think that the disrespect you're doing to Rudy Gobert right now is kind of insane. I mean, what he's been able to do in terms of transforming this Minnesota Timberwolves team into, a number one seed with the best defense in the NBA while playing elite level basketball and number one defense in the NBA, and it's not even really close. They're like their defensive rating is 107.7. The next best team is Boston Celtics at 110.6. And so, I mean, they
That's good,
have an
yeah.
amazing defense. And Rudy Gobert, if you've watched him this year, he's been absolutely just a showstopper on the end of the floor, shutting down players, get racking up blocks, contesting basically every single shot that comes at the rim. And so for me, this is a clear pick for Rudy Gobert. And honestly, he's like a, with another defense player in the year award in his cabinet, I think that Rudy Gobert is pretty much a solidified Hall of Famer at this point.
Oh, he's already a Hall of Famer without another one.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, first ballot, maybe.
Oh, I don't think there's been a question. I think people just don't like him. But I think he's been a first ballot Hall of Famer since he won his third Defensive Player of the Year.
Okay, explain why you don't think he should win another one this year.
Look, I just think it's not fair to say that he doesn't deserve it because I think he does. But I think just looking at the stats, like especially per 36, Victor Wembanyama's defense is ridiculous. He's better at getting steals. Like I feel like as far as Rudy Gobert goes, like he does a lot more than we give him credit for. But at the same time, people just look at him and say, oh, like he's good at blocking shots, and that's why we should give it to him. Defense isn't just about blocks, and defense isn't just about I think that's what in steals. Like, defense isn't just those two things. People forget about that. And Wemby is the blocks and steals candidate. If you want to say, oh, who's the best at blocks and steals, it's Victor Wembanyama. And I think the NBA tends to lean into that, which is why he was my pick. Now, going into the side conversation, which is the NBA shouldn't value that. The NBA should be valuing rebounding, how teams have to scheme for you, how much you do actually do on the court. I think that favors Anthony Davis, and I think Rudy Gobert is somewhere in between.
Okay. I don't know where this narrative is coming from. Didn't Marcus Smart win a Defensive Player of the Year? Didn't
Yes.
Jaren Jackson Jr. win a Defensive Player of the Year? Actually, that's a bad. That actually
Yeah,
favors
Jaren
your
Jackson
argument.
Jr. was like, it was like he had the most blocks, so he should win. Like that was Jaren Jackson Jr.'s argument. And
That's fair. That's
the
fair.
argument for Marcus Smart was he's small and he gets a lot of steals, so he should get the award. That was the
No, no,
argument.
no, no. The Celtics were an amazing defensive team, and he was the best defensive player on that team. I mean, that was
Right, but the
pretty.
argument, right, but this still the argument is he gets a lot of steals. That's the argument when you say it. The argument for Rudy Gobert is he gets a lot of blocks and he changes how players have to attack the rim, and he's a really good rebounder. That's a good argument. Anthony Davis's argument, I've already said it enough times, and I think that's also a very good argument. But I think he's never going to win the Defensive Player of the Year because he doesn't get counting stats defensively. He gets like he's a weird in between. He adjusts the most shots of anybody in the league. He's averaging the most defensive rebounds in the league, but he's not going to win. I think you're
Okay.
right. I think Rudy Gobert or Anthony Davis will win it, but I think Victor Wembanyama is the sort of counting stats player.
Sure. That's fair. And I mean, I think Wemby is gonna win one probably within the next like couple years, but I don't think this is
Might be a
his
little too
year.
soon.
Just because I think also teams like your team defense has to factor in Defensive Player of the Year. You cannot be the Defensive Player of the Year on a bad defensive team. Like,
That's
I
fair.
think that great defensive players make a team into a good defensive team, or at least like the disparity between like on the court, off the court has to be like historic. But I don't think that's what we're seeing with the Spurs right now. So that's why I don't think Wemby would win it for me. But speaking of Wemby, let's talk about the Rookie of the Year race, because I think it's basically just the two-man race between Wemby and Chet.
Well, I don't even think it's a two-man race anymore. I think it's done. I think the
Well, I
race is
think, yeah,
over.
no. I mean, like, the only other person you could feasibly even utter into that conversation is Chet Holmgren. But I think it is, yeah, a one-man race. Wemby's winning this. I think it's no discussion, like, maybe unanimous. Because, I mean, just the season he's having has been insane. Like, literally surpassed even our highest expectations for what we would have thought he's doing his rookie year. Just some quick stats about like how insanely good Victor Wembanyama has been this year. So this season he's had more steals than Alex Caruso, more three-pointers than Jalen Williams, more blocks than Jaren Jackson Jr. and Kristaps Porzingis combined, and he's doing all of this despite playing fewer minutes than his Euro teammate Bilal Coulibaly on the Wizards. And just in
That's
terms of
crazy.
shooting, right? I'm gonna just name the players with the highest pull-up 3-point percentage since the start of 2024. So number one, we have Mike Conley at 48.2%. Makes sense, he's a great pull-up 3-point shooter. Number two, we have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, MVP guy, you know, like he's in those talks, like one of the first team all NBA kind of guy, makes sense. Number three, Colin Sexton, terrific shooter, no real surprises there. Number four, Victor Wembanyama at 45.6% on basically the same attempts as those other guys. Is that
Yeah.
not insane that a 7-3 guy has one of the highest pull-up 3-point percentages since 2024? That's unbelievable. And just kind of last thing I'll mention is just in terms of his impact on the NBA, he has been the third most watched NBA player on social media behind Steph Curry in LeBron James. I mean, in his one dunk, you know, where he basically takes off from like just inside the 3-point line, or the no, not the 3-point, but just inside the free throw line, and you know, basically dunks it from there. That's been the most social media, most watched clip on social media this season. So, I mean, the stuff we're seeing him do is absurd. I wonder if you have any other things to mention about Victor. Because this has been unbelievable to watch.
All I gotta say is the NBA is in good hands. Really, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And this is the future, you know? This is where the NBA is heading to. Like these kinds of guys, like Chet and like Wemby, guys who are 7 foot plus, shoot to three off the dribble, you know, pass, you know, they can pass it, you know, to anyone on the court, and they can also block and steal and run the full floor. It's just incredible. I'm so excited to see the future of the NBA, and I don't even know what else to say because it's just so incredible.
Just one thing, like, it's kind of insane to me that he is playing this well after we've had so many guys kind of in the same vein, where it's like the most hyped prospect since LeBron, you know, generational talent. Like, this guy could be the face in the NBA. And so many of those guys not really pan out. You know, you think about Zion Williamson, is the first name that came to mind. He's been very
Andrew
good.
Wiggins.
Andrew Wiggins, right? Even a guy like, honestly, Markelle Fultz was a guy also like that. Maybe not to the same extent, but you know, people were hyping him up. He looked like the clear number one pick out of college, just how he looked at Washington. And none of those guys really panned out. I mean, obviously Zion has been a very good player. Andrew Wiggins won a championship in Golden State, but Victor Wembanyama looks to be like a legit generational, all-time, potentially Hall of Famer talent. Maybe even like not even Hall of Famer. I think Hall of Famer would be like underselling it. I think that this
Yes,
guy
underwhelming.
could be like a top 15 player when it's all said and done, maybe even higher.
Yeah, and that's crazy to think about. I think we
Yeah.
should move on to the next award, though, because we got plenty to get to here, and we're getting kind of long into the pod. But next award, most improved player. I think there's a lot of guys we could talk about here. So I'll just name a few, and you tell me who you think deserves it. You know, let's talk about Shea, Tyrese Maxey, Scottie Barnes, Derek White. Kobe White and then Alperen Şengün. All these guys have really taken their game up this year, but who do you think is the guy who deserves the most improved player most?
I'll have to give this to Tyrese Maxey. I mean, he elevated his game from last year being a very solid player, you know, had some big moments even in the playoffs, to being a solidified all-star, right? Like a clear number two option behind Joel Embiid, and the guy who can really put the team on his back sometimes. He's a terrific scorer, you know, one a premier shooter in this league, can get to the cup at ease. And yeah, I think he elevated his game in all aspects, so I'd give it to Tyrese.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you. With that, it's just like, you know, you go from being behind James Harden, you have a weird situation, and you just come out on top and look like the guy that people didn't think you could be. So I think, you know, great, good on him. But just some other guys I want to highlight. I think Shea is probably gonna be number two in the voting, or maybe even number one. Like I think he could very well win it just because he took his game from an all-star to a superstar to an MVP candidate. Like he's right up there. And nobody saw that. You know, this Thunder team is going to be as good as they are, and it's all because of Shea. And
Yeah.
then the only other guy I think really I do want to mention, Kobe White. Man, he's having a breakout season on the Bulls. You know, with Zach LaVine being injured and this sort of weird limbo state for the Bulls franchise, Kobe White has been the one bright spot for them.
Definitely. Yeah. It's been really great to see if you're a Bulls fan. And I think that, you know, hopefully the Bulls realize that they have a star in the making here and they sort of do something about it. But let's talk about Sixth Man of the Year. Some guys in this conversation: Malik Monk, Tim Hardaway Jr., Norman Powell, Bogdan Bogdanovic. So who do you have winning this one?
Malik Monk, and I don't think this is close. You look at the Vegas odds, and he's by far and away the guy who people think is going to win this award. And when you watch him play, I think what's really changed, you know, he's still that guy who's very free-flowing, fluid, dynamic scorer with a ton of bounce, but he's really elevated his passing game. I mean, he's averaging over five assists, you know, per game for the first time ever in his career. I think it's like a two or three assists per game jump. And he's really taken control of the second unit for the Kings, and he's been a big reason they're able to win those non-De'Aaron Fox minutes. And he looks great alongside De'Aaron Fox as well. I don't really think there's any incredible sixth men in the NBA this year. Just around the board, I think a lot of those guys who were great sixth men have moved into the starting lineup. Like Austin Reaves is a guy who would have been in a contention for an award like this, but he moved into the starting lineup. But I think
Emmanuel
it's
quickly.
consensus Malik Emmanuel Quickley, exactly. I think Malik Monk is just now consensus for the award.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to go with it here, but I want to give a shout. I'll go with Malik, but I want to give a shout out to Naz Reid on the Timberwolves. I mean, who would have thought that, a big guy coming off the bench would work this well? But I mean, Naz Reid has blown me away with how good he's been on both ends of the floor, and just like he's been just a terrific piece for this Minnesota team that's surpassed all expectations. So, shout out Naz Reid.
Yes.
Also, let's talk about Coach of the Year. I mean, I think this is like kind of a three-man race between Chris Finch with the Timberwolves, Mark Daigneault with OKC, and Joe Mazzulla with the Boston Celtics. Who do you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and give it to Mark Dagano. I think just like OKC was just so unexpected. I think Joe Mazzulla, he's gonna come pretty close there. But ultimately, it's not about what team is the number one team in the conference, like standings wise. It's about who really shocked you, and that was definitely the Kings this year.
The Kings?
Or sorry, no, I said the Kings. I meant the Thunder.
Yeah, I was like, I
I
was so
pulled the Kings
confused.
out of nowhere, bro.
Yeah, and it's like that's why I give it to Steve Kerr with the Golden State Warriors. What?
Oh
That's
boy.
fair. I think, yeah, no, definitely Mark Daigneault, but I want to say Chris Finch because
Yeah.
I'm like, I think the Timberwolves are just one of the more shocking stories in the NBA because we saw the potential that OKC had. We saw how good Jalen Williams was going to be. We knew that Chet Holmgren had insane potential. But this Timberwolves team looked like a team that was like ready to just keel over and die. You know, the Rudy Gobert trade looked like a disaster. Karl-Anthony Towns, Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert, how was that ever going to work? Anthony
Yeah.
Edwards didn't really seem to make that jump we thought, but somehow they turned it all together and became a one seed and a legit contender, so I'd give it to Chris
You know
Finch.
what? I think you actually changed my mind. I'm giving it to Chris Finch simply because of something you said, which is how do you make so many bigs work? This is a team everyone saw. You're like Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. How do you play them together? And obviously, you have Naz Reid, Kyle Anderson. You just have so many bigs on this team. There's not enough minutes at the big position, and they made it work. OKC. They had it coming. They're a young team. They had a lot of potential, and this team clicked so well, especially once you added Chet Holmgren in there. It was like it wasn't even fair. But, the Timberwolves, that was real coaching there to make that work.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
I'm just switching my opinion. I think I'm with you right there.
Awesome. Cool. So we'll see if our how our award predictions pan out. I mean, it's not really our predictions, it's more of our picks. So I like our picks though. I think we have some good variety in there. And I want to talk about quickly to just kind of recap in the state of the Western and Eastern conferences and just get some of your thoughts here. So the West is extremely tight. The 1 and 4 seeds are within 4 games, and the 5 and 10 seeds are within 3.5 games. And we've seen some risers and fallers, notably like the Golden State Warriors have been figuring it out as of late and like really rising and making a late push here. So, Hunter, how do you see the West shaking out? What teams do you think are going to drop in the standings, and which ones do you think are going to rise?
To be honest, I have no clue. This Western Conference is so tight. It's so incredible, just how close this is. It's got to be the closest we've seen in a while. But the thing is, that's not even true because last year it was pretty much just as close. I think the NBA is just this good. The Western Conference just has this much talent. And then there's a lot of teams who we didn't expect to be as good as they are. I'm going to go ahead and say I think a team that could fall a little bit is the Phoenix Suns. I think they've just been very plagued with injury. I could see them being in the play-in tournament. I could see the same thing for New Orleans Pelicans. This is another team I could see sort of dropping off a little bit. And I would also say the Kings. I think they're going to sit right around the play-in as well. I think teams I could see rise, like you were saying, Golden State has really improved a lot. And I think Dallas is just a really good team, and Kyrie Irving is there. And we also have to talk about. Or we talked about it on the last pod, but just this new roster with Daniel Gafford, and PJ Washington, they look really good together. So I think that Dallas is going to continue to rise. They're 8-2 in their last 10, and I don't think that's going away. A team that you might be surprised by, I think they're going to stay where they're at, is the Lakers. I think they're going to be in the play-in.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of accepted that.
Yeah, and I think realistically, you look at the Lakers' schedule, it's one of the hardest in the league. They're playing back to back. They have the Nuggets, they have the Suns, they have they just played the Clippers. They have the Celtics, they have the Bucks coming into town. Like, it's just game after game after game. It's just really hard. They're playing the Kings as well. There's some defining games in there, and I think the Lakers could pick it up, but I just think it's a little overwhelming, and I'm not gonna sit here and say the Lakers are gonna be the 5 seed in this NBA playoffs. It's not gonna happen.
That's true, but it is. I mean, that's the somber reality of the Los Angeles Lakers. But I also want to say shout out to the Lakers for a win against the Clippers last night.
Yes.
21-point comeback.
Wow,
LeBron,
what a
19th
game.
in the fourth, an unbelievable win. And I mean, if they keep that up, who knows? Maybe we'll make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think we can move on to the East unless you wanted to talk about the Western Conference. Okay,
We can
cool.
move on.
Let me ask you about the Eastern Conference, right? Because this is a little bit less tight of a conference. Celtics clinched the play-in. They're going to clinch the playoffs soon. They're by and far ahead. They're like 8 games ahead of the 2 seed. But between the 2 seed and the 8 seed, it's only a 5-game difference. So it's not that big of a gap. Somebody in the 8 seed could maybe climb to the 4 or the 3 seed even. Where do you see this Eastern Conference shaking out? And do you think there could be some movement?
I mean, to be honest, I'm pretty much saying I see it staying pretty stagnant. I think that, the Bucks and Knicks could challenge the Cavs for that 2 seed there. I think the 2 seed is really up for grabs between Milwaukee and New York. But I mean, besides that, I think that, we're gonna see Miami, Indiana, and Philly in that sort of bottom half of this Eastern Conference. And then the play-in, there's definitely gonna be some movement between Brooklyn and Atlanta, and maybe Toronto gets in there. The Magic are going to be in that range too, but for the most part I see it staying pretty similar with some minor movement, and obviously no one's touching the Celtics either.
Yeah, no, I fully agree there. I think it would be a tragedy to see the Knicks and the Heat in the first round go against each other. I think that would be a really good, hard-fought playoff series. But I want to see one of those teams or both of those teams play against the Celtics, just because I want to see how the Celtics fare against so much physicality. Something Stephen A. Smith talked about, just talking about the Knicks in general, is that if the Knicks are fully healthy, he thinks they're good enough to beat the Celtics in the 7-game series. Do you think this is fact or do you think this is cap?
I mean, yeah, I think so. Like, I think we've, I mean, I'm extremely high on the Knicks this year. I think that, the level of physicality, the level of grit they played with, we've talked about a lot on this pod. So I won't harp too much on it. But, they have a bona fide number one option, Jalen Brunson. And he, in my opinion, is one of those like 10 guys that can really lead you to a finals run. I think that he has that, he's cut from that cloth. And, that is really what they've been missing in previous playoff runs, like in 2021. And I think Julius Randle's game is going to translate a lot more. I really like the ascension of guys like Dante DiVincenzo. He's been playing really, really well as of late. And so I think there's a lot of fire starters on this team. They made great moves at the deadline. And so I think it's definitely possible, but obviously can't count out the Celtics stacked team. But I'm just big on the Knicks. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, I think that's a good place to call the pod, man. This is a long one,
Definitely.
but a good one, and we got a lot covered. I don't know if we'll be back before spring break, where Braff and I are both heading out. Spend a little time back home with the family, but we'll be
Yes, and
back.
also we will be going to see the Lakers in person. So we're doing
Yes.
some investigative reporting on the
Well,
scenes. We'll be reporting back.
yeah, we'll be actually in the post game. We'll be in the locker room talking to LeBron as he combs his non-existent hair.
We'll be like, LeBron, what are your thoughts on the most recent episode of Time Out Talk? What did you think of Hunter's take on the MVP race? And do you have any comment? And he's like, I'm not even
No,
gonna do a
dude,
little.
knowing LeBron, he would be like, yeah, Time Out Talk's a great podcast, bro.
That's my favorite
I
podcast.
Dude, that's
Right.
so good.
That's a good place to call up. Thank you all so much for listening. And we'll see you all, if not next week, then the week after that. So
Peace.
thanks for listening and take care. Bye-bye.